At 11, when the movie let out, he returned to Walcott. The family's mongrel dog was waiting on the front porch. It was whining with hunger, so Lowell Lee, entering the house and stepping across his father's corpse, prepared a bowl of warm milk and mush. Then, while the dog was lapping it up, he telephoned the sheriff's office and said, "My name is Lowell Lee Andrews. I live at 6040 Walcott Drive, and I want to report a robbery." Four officers of the Wyandotte County Sheriff's Patrol responded. One of the group, Patrolman Myers, described the scene as follows. "Well, it was 1 a.m. when we got there. All the lights in the house was on. And this big, dark-haired boy, Lowell Lee, he was sitting on the porch petting his dog, patting it on the head. Lieutenant Athey asked the boy what happened, and he pointed to the door, real casual, and said, 'Look in there.' Having looked, the astonished officers summoned the county coroner, a gentleman who was also impressed by young Andrew's callous nonchalance, for when the coroner asked him what funeral arrangements he wished to have made, Andrews replied with a shrug, 'I don't care what you do with them.' Shortly, two senior detectives appeared and began to question the family's lone survivor. Though convinced he was lying, the detectives listened respectfully to the tale of how he had driven to Lawrence to fetch a typewriter, gone to a movie, and arrived home after midnight to find the bedrooms ransacked and his family slain. He stayed with the story and might never have altered it if, subsequent to his arrest and removal to the county jail, the authorities had not obtained the aid of the Reverend Mr. Verto C. Dameron. The Reverend Dameron, a Dickensian personage, an unctuous and jolly brimstone and damnation orator, was minister of the Grandview Baptist Church in Kansas City, Kansas, the church the Andrews family attended regularly. Awakened by an urgent call from the county coroner, Dameron presented himself at the jail around 3 a.m., whereupon detectives, who had been strenuously but abortively interrogating the suspect, withdrew to another room, leaving the minister to consult privately with his parishioner. It proved a fatal interview for the latter, who many months afterward gave this account of it to a friend. "Mr. Dameron said, 'Now, Lee, I've known you all your life, since you were just a little tadpole. And I knew your daddy all his life. We grew up together. We were childhood friends. And that's why I'm here. Not just because I'm your minister, but because I feel like you're a member of my own family. And because you need a friend that you can talk to and trust. And I feel terrible about this terrible event. And I'm every bit as anxious as you are to see the guilty party caught and punished.' He wanted to know, was I thirsty? And I was. So he got me a Coke. And after that, he's going on about the Thanksgiving vacation and how do I like school, when all of a sudden he says, 'Now, Lee, there seems to be some doubt among the people here regarding your innocence. I'm sure you'd be willing to take a lie detector and convince these men of your innocence so they can get busy and catch the guilty party.' Then he said, 'Lee, you didn't do this terrible thing, did you? If you did, now is the time to purge your soul.' The next thing was, I thought, what difference does it make? And I told him the truth, most everything about it. He kept wagging his head and rolling his eyes and rubbing his hands together, and he said it was a terrible thing, and I would have to answer to the Almighty, have to purge my soul by telling the officers what I'd told him. And would I?" Receiving an affirmative nod, the prisoner's spiritual advisor stepped into an adjacent room, which was crowded with expectant policemen, and elatedly issued an invitation. "Come on in. The boy's ready to make a statement."